The messenger came at noon with a wax-sealed packet and the smell of horse sweat clinging to his cloak. Ilse took it from him on the farmyard step, her hands dusted with flour from the morning bread. She did not offer him water. She did not offer him anything except the copper coin she kept in her apron pocket for exactly this sort of interruption. He mounted again before she could decide whether to thank him or curse him. The horse tossed its head, impatient, and they were gone down the lane in a cloud of grit. Ilse stood there a moment with the packet in her hand, feeling the weight of it lighter than she expected, as though whatever lay inside had already been weighed and found insufficient. Inside the cottage, the light fell in slanted rectangles through the window. Dust moved in it, slow and indifferent. Ilse broke the seal with her thumb. The parchment unrolled with a dry crackle, and she read it standing where she was, boots still tracking mud onto the floorboards. By order of Lord Caelan, the estate known as Harrow's End shall pass to Ilse Vane, daughter of Mara Vane, upon the death of Eamon Vane, late custodian of the Pilgrim's Road, all holdings, lands, and appurtenances thereof. Appurtenances, a word that meant nothing and everything. Ilse folded the paper back up and set it on the table beside the chalk-marked ledger she used for tracking grain and livestock. She stared at it for a long time. Then she laughed a short, sharp sound that startled the cat off the stool. The road, a useless strip of cracked stone. Uncle Eamon had left her the road, a liability she'd have to maintain but couldn't sell, along with the field and the cottage and the stubborn patch of earth behind the barn where the wheat refused to grow straight. For 7 years she'd lived here, 7 years of watching pilgrims disappear past the northern waystone, and now the baron's clerk had sent her a piece of parchment to confirm she owned the stones, to another tax on land that produced nothing. She walked to the window and looked out toward the lane. The pilgrim's road stretched north from the farm, a ribbon of cracked limestone disappearing into the hollow beyond the ridge. It had been quiet for 7 years. The last traveler, the last anyone had passed through in the autumn of the great frost, a gaunt figure with a pack and no face, moving north without looking back. Ilse had watched from the same window. She'd wanted to call out. She hadn't. Now the road belonged to her. Another burden, really 3 acres of wind-battered wheat, a goat that wouldn't stop eating the garden, a cottage that leaked when the rain came from the east, and a cracked stone path she couldn't fence off or plow under because some ancient law bound it to her family's name. Ilse pulled on her coat and went outside. The afternoon sun was pale and thin, the kind of light that made everything look slightly false, as though the world had been painted over with a layer of ash. She walked down the lane toward the road, her boots finding the familiar grooves in the dirt where the cart wheels had worn their paths over decades. The air smelled of damp soil and something cold and mineral, like stone that had been buried underground for centuries and only now exhaled. The first waystone rose from the earth 10 paces past the farm gate. It was taller than a man, wider than her forearm, and covered in moss that grew only on its northern face, as though the stone itself were afraid of the sun. Ilse pressed her palm against it. Cold. Not the cold of shade or damp, but the deep cold of something that held winter inside it, year-round. She had felt this cold 100 times since she was a girl, and she had never learned what it meant. The waystones lined the road at regular intervals, 3 between the farm and the first hollow, 5 more past the hollow to the ridge, and then the cluster near the northern boundary, where the road began its descent into the lowlands. Uncle Eamon had maintained them. Ilse knew this because she had watched him do it, year after year, scraping lichen from their surfaces, clearing the weeds from their bases, speaking words to them in a voice too low for her to hear. She'd assumed they were prayers. Now she wondered if they were instructions. Before Ilse could turn back to the cottage, a figure stumbled from the tree line near the first waystone. He was young, his tunic torn, blood matting his hair to his forehead. He looked at her with desperate eyes and croaked, "The way, please, which way north?" His legs gave out and he collapsed against the stone, his breath coming in wet gasps. Ilse stood over him, the cold of the waystone still on her palm, and felt the silence of 7 years shatter like glass. Ilse stopped at the second marker. Where the moss-covered monolith should have risen from the earth, there was only a shallow, fresh hole, the dirt still loose around its edges. Torvin's boot prints were visible nearby, broad and deep, leading back toward the lane. She knelt and pressed her fingers to the disturbed soil warm, as though the ground had only just surrendered its stone. 7 years of maintenance and someone had come in the night and taken one clean away. At the first hollow, the road narrowed. The stones leaned inward, as though leaning over to listen. Ilse stopped and listened herself. Nothing. No voices, no footsteps, no sound at all except the wind moving through the grass and the occasional cry of a hawk circling above the ridge. 7 years of silence. 7 years of a road with nowhere to go. Yet the stones seemed to hold the shape of footsteps that weren't there. A phantom imprint of the thousands who had passed before, pressed into the cold rock like breath on glass. She crouched and traced the cracks in the limestone with her fingers. Some of them were old deep fissures that had split the stone during the last hard winter, but others were fresh, spiderweb fractures that radiated from the joints where individual stones met. The road was falling apart. She could see it now, clearly, for the first time. The Baron would hear about this. The Baron always heard about things that belonged to him. A bird landed on the nearest waystone, a small gray thing with a pale breast. It tilted its head, looked at Ilse, and took off again. She watched it fly north, toward the hollow, toward the ridge, toward wherever birds went when they wanted to disappear. When she returned to the cottage, the light had shifted. The rectangles on the floor were shorter now, darker at the edges. Ilse lit the lamp and sat at the table with the deed spread before her. She read it again, slowly, searching for clauses or conditions or hidden meanings. There were none. The Baron's clerk had written what needed to be written, and the Baron's seal confirmed it. Harrow's End was hers. The road was hers. The stones were hers. She thought about burning the deed. It would be easy enough to strike a flint, hold the edge to the flame, watch it curl and blacken and turn to ash. But she didn't. Instead, she folded it neatly and placed it back in the envelope, then slid the envelope into the drawer where she kept the needles and the thread and the small brass key that opened the cupboard beneath the stairs. Outside, the wind picked up. It moved through the wheat in waves, bending it low and then letting it rise again, over and over, as though the field were breathing. Ilse sat in the lamplight and listened to it. She thought about her uncle, dead now for 7 years, buried in the patch of ground behind the barn where the wheat grew crookedest. She thought about the way he used to stand at the road's edge every evening, watching the horizon, as though he expected someone to come. 7 years, and no one had come. Ilse blew out the lamp and went to bed. Morning came gray and wet. Rain fell in a steady sheet, drumming on the roof and filling the gutters until water overflowed and ran down the walls in thin brown streams. Ilse woke before dawn, as she always did, and dressed in the dark. She ate bread and cheese standing at the counter, then went out into the yard to check the goat. The goat was fine. It was always fine. It stood in the corner of the pen, chewing cud with an expression of profound satisfaction, its yellow eyes half closed against the rain. Ilse filled its trough with hay and watched it eat. She thought about the deed. She thought about the road. She thought about the way the waystones had felt beneath her hand, cold, solid, patient. After breakfast, she walked to the northern boundary. The rain had stopped by then, leaving the world washed and gleaming, every leaf and blade of grass dripping. The boundary stones were low and flat, half buried in the earth, marking the edge of her land. Beyond them, the road continued north, descending into the lowlands toward the Baron's territory, toward the keep. Ilse stood at the boundary and looked north. The sky was clearing, patches of blue appearing between the clouds like tears in fabric. Somewhere far away, beyond the lowlands and the hills and the places she had never been, the road ended. She had never asked her uncle where. He had only said, in the voice she could remember most clearly, that it went to the sea. The northern shore. A place in stories and in old maps, visible only on the clearest days when the wind blew from the east and the air was still enough to carry the scent of salt across the lowlands. Ilse had never seen it. She had never wanted to. The sea was too far, too uncertain, too much like the things her mother used to hum about in songs that ended on notes that hung in the air like unanswered questions. She turned back toward the farm. The wheat was flattened where the rain had beaten it down, but it would recover. Wheat always recovered. Ilse had learned that much in 7 years of farming land that wanted to kill her. She walked past the goat, past the barn, past the crooked patch where her uncle was buried, and into the cottage. The parchment lay heavy on the table. Ilse took it, retrieved the iron key from her belt, and descended to the cellar beneath the stairs. She slid the deed into the wooden chest beside the rusted sewing awl and the spool of waxed thread, then barred the door behind her before returning to the table. She sat there for a long time, staring at nothing. The house was quiet except for the cat, which had jumped onto the stool and was purring softly, a sound like stones tumbling in a stream. Ilse thought about the waystones. She thought about the fractures in the road. She thought about the 7 years of silence. Then she stood up, went to the door, and stepped outside again. The afternoon was breaking. The clouds had thinned, and sunlight broke through in patches, illuminating the wet fields in gold and green. Ilse walked down the lane toward the road, her boots splashing in the puddles, her hands shoved deep in her pockets. She reached the first waystone and pressed her palm against it again. Cold, solid, patient. She let her hand fall, the gesture heavy with finality, and turned her face toward the northern horizon where the Pilgrim's Road vanished into the mist.